Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program. This is Tuesday, April the 21st, 2020, in case you've lost track of time, days and time. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
Fred Jackson in our Venus studios.
Yes, great morning here in Venus.
I don't know why I look over my shoulder when I say that, as if I can see through two walls, like Superman, to see you, Fred. Fred's about 20 or 30 yards away from us in our different studios. We maintain social distancing here for the program. Speaking of social distancing, Dr. Ray Pritchard's in KC, Kansas. Good morning, Ray.
It's a beautiful day here on Pluto.
our Pluto studios. Give us a weather report for
Tim, this is golf weather. I'm looking out the window right now, and it's bright blue skies, sunny weather. Going to be about 70 early this afternoon. This is golf weather, Tim.
Hey,
this
you got that. And bike riding weather.
And bike, yes, sir.
Just take the roof off the building weather right there.
That's right. For anything. Let's get outside.
Get outside and do something. By the way, we haven't checked with you recently on the coronavirus situation in the Kansas City area. Is it?
You know, it's like it is in a lot of cities around the country, not New York or Detroit. And we have our cases, and we're adding to them every day. But the folks who head up the stuff say we're okay. The hospitals are not
right.
We're not running at capacity yet. So far, so good.
Good, good, good. Well, Walker, how can folks keep up with us on the web?
Yeah. Various ways. The first way, you can always visit our website, afr.net. There you can catch the podcast at our website, afr.net. Then we have the app, the AFR app on your smartphone. Many of our listeners listen on the app. And then lastly, we're on Facebook and YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues on Facebook and YouTube. You can watch the show there. So we get a lot of good ways for listeners to keep up with the show.
All right. Fred, by the way, Dr. Frank Turek will be with us a little bit later on, and Sandy Rios. So they normally join us on Tuesdays, and they will be coming up. So you don't want to miss our conversations with those two. Fred, what's leading the news this
morning? Well, breaking news at this hour. In Washington, D.C., they are spending far more money than they said they would. Does that sound familiar?
No way.
It's been going on for a long time.
All right, they've been talking about and negotiating the last several days. You know, they ran out of money initially, the small business loan to help keep people on the payroll because of the shutdown of the coronavirus.
Right.
Initially, the Trump administration asked for $250 billion more for these small businesses.
More than the what? The original 250?
The original 250 or 300 billion, whatever it was. It's just a few billion. That package, according to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer just a few minutes ago, has now ballooned to $500 billion. So a request for $250 billion from the president has grown to $500 billion. And Chuck Schumer is saying we have a deal. And they expect to vote on this later on today in the Senate. Now, what happened was the Democrats added much more money for things like hospitals and virus testing. They actually wanted more money for food stamp programs and all of that kind of thing, but apparently they didn't get that. But it'll be $500 billion now.
And that'll be voted on today?
Voted on in the Senate today, and I think by tomorrow maybe in the House. So,
Walker, is this to refund the
payroll protection program?
Yes.
Yeah, the majority, or at least 50% of this bill, is going to replenish the payroll protection program, which was originally funded at $250 billion, which, from all that I've heard, is actually a very good program because it encourages businesses to keep employees on the payroll, and they apply for this.
This wasn't typical welfare.
No, what is originally a loan turns into a grant if you use it for payroll and operational expenses. So that's what's kept the unemployment numbers from going even farther than they have.
They can go higher. Farther?
They can. But these businesses have applied for this, and many haven't been able to get it because they ran out of money. So that's what at least half of this is going to go towards. The other half, as Fred mentioned, goes to hospitals and other things that we don't know about. And this is what frustrates people with Washington, is they pass legislation and 60 to 70% of it goes to good things, but the other 30% go to stuff that nobody really knows what's going on. Last time it was the Kennedy Center, along with various other pet projects. The Kennedy Center got at least $25 million mm-hmm. in the last bailout mm-hmm. or the last aid package. And then the next week, the Kennedy Center laid off half of their orchestra staff. So where did that money go? No one really knows.
Poor cello guys.
But the thing is, that's what frustrates people with this process, is they do this jumbo bill. Half of it's good, half of it's necessary, the other half's not, but they do it all at once.
Yeah, Ray?
So we've got a situation here where everything Walker said is totally true. And there's no doubt, right, last night some stuff got thrown into the bag that we aren't going to find out about until much later, or maybe, Walker, we're not going to find out at all. But I would guess that when this thing comes up for a vote in the Senate and then tomorrow in the House, it may not be unanimous, but it's going to be close to unanimous, right? Because both parties know we have to do this.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when you tie in that payroll protection program replenishing to legislation, you're going to get probably 80 to 90% consent amongst both parties, just because that program in and of itself is working, and it's crucial to keeping people on the job at various.
All right, I got
employers.
A question for you. I know we're not betting men here, at least that I know of. Anyone want to confess? We're not betting men here, but I got to know. I want to get a vote here of yes or no. You ready? I'm going to start with Ray, then Walker, then Fred.
Okay.
All right, Ray. Yes, no. Rand Paul, he votes yes or no?
He'll vote yes. He'll vote yes.
Walker?
I think, yeah, Rand Paul will probably either not vote or vote yes.
Fred?
I say, knowing Rand Paul, libertarian, no.
Yeah. He's about the only one that will... I'm going to say...
They're not going to need his vote, right?
So. And no, they're not going to need... Well, that's true. He doesn't have to cast a vote that makes it pass or not. That's always easier to have conviction when you're not when you're not on the spot. But he's one of the few... I can't think of anybody else quite like him in terms of always pointing out, spending problems that most of us would agree with, but... Then again, there again, as Walker pointed out, sometimes you just they don't want to vote no because, I mean, good night. You'd be kicked out of office if you voted no on replenishing this fund, for example. And let me just say this, as Dan Celia has said, and I haven't talked to Dan about this particular increase in this program that they're voting on today,
payroll protection program.
Yeah, that. But Dan said initially when they passed the multi-trillion-dollar package 3 weeks ago or a month ago, whenever it was, that he considered that to be aid for America, meaning that we help everybody else around the world when there's an earthquake or a flood or a typhoon or something that. So, in this case, we're helping ourselves. We're helping the American worker. Mm-hmm. Yes, we had to borrow it, but he didn't see it as, unnecessary, wasteful spending in the name of some other cause, I guess you could say.
Right.
So, but it's still money that, added a couple trillion now, three or four trillion in the end to our debt. But let's not think about that right now, okay? We'll think about that when our children get older. Right. And then but I don't know when or if will it, there's no plans to ever repay the 23, 4, 5.
Yeah.
Who's counting?
Right.
$1 trillion. So we'll see how that goes down the road. Will there ever be a time when you have to say we can't borrow any more money? The U.S. can't borrow any more money. I don't know if that's ever going to happen or not, but that's a great unknown.
Yeah. Well, the problem is we've got people in Washington who no one wants to rein it in, and
$24 trillion.
For example, yeah. Last week. The Republicans, they were simply wanting to replenish the payroll protection program by adding $250 billion to that. Well, that just turned into $500 in a week because Democrats would not vote for a simple one-page bill replenishing the program unless they got all their pet projects too.
Or at least some of them. So, yeah, or most of them, whatever.
Yeah, they doubled the bill.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Now we go to North Carolina, where our good buddy Dr. Frank Turek from Cross Examine Ministries is on with us, as he is most Tuesdays. Good morning, Frank.
Hey, a few trillion here, a few trillion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money.
who is that? Who was that that said that? I think they were talking billions. Was that...
I don't know who that was.
That wasn't Yogi. I don't think that was Yogi Berra.
I think it was
Will Rogers or somebody like that. Anyway,
as Yogi always said, I don't go down to the ballpark anymore because it's just too crowded.
Yeah,
you know, there's just too many people down there.
When you come to the fork in the road, take it.
That's what
he's exactly saying as well. All right, Frank, let's talk about, you wanted to talk about the morality of the coronavirus versus the science of the coronavirus. What are you talking about here?
Well, yeah, my contention is we know more about the morality of the coronavirus than we do the science of the coronavirus. In other words, we know it's wrong to allow a virus to indiscriminately kill people if we can prevent it. We know that with more certainty than we know certain aspects of this virus. We don't even know the transmission rate now. We don't know the death rate. In fact, that's why the models are so wrong. You just remember you go back a month, people were talking about 2 million dead. Now we're talking 60,000. I mean, obviously that's still a lot of people, but how could you be that wrong? Because we know more about the morality than we know about the science. And I have a book what is it called? It's called Stealing from God. And the title of the science chapter is called Science Doesn't Say Anything, Scientists Do. Why are we getting these different conclusions from different models? Because scientists say different things about the assumptions that they put into these models. So you see, because all data needs to be gathered, all data needs to be interpreted. And who does that? Science does not do that. Scientists do that. So they don't have enough information to really know what assumptions to put into those models. So they have a reasonable guess. They plug those numbers in, and then they get these wild estimates. And yet we're doing this precisely because we know it's wrong to allow a virus to indiscriminately kill innocent people. So we know more about morality on this issue than we know about the science.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's an interesting observation because you always hear people saying, oh, science can save us, science can do this, science can do that. Science can't do anything unless scientists have the right information and can interpret the information properly and put them into these complicated models to then help us make policy decisions. Mm-hmm. But we're making policy decisions not because of the science necessarily. We're making policy decisions because of the morality, because we know that it's wrong, again, to indiscriminately allow a virus to kill people if you can prevent it.
Right.
Frank, that raises a real interesting question, because if we, the scientists, they're in a world of their own, running their algorithms and punching the numbers in and tracing the curve and so on. The rest of us who don't have access to that kind of data, all we do is we look at it and we go, well, these fellows up at the University of Washington, they started off with this unbelievably high number, and they've been successively lowering it down. Does this mean, I'm trying to think of, where does that leave the ordinary, reasonably educated person who's not a scientist? When we hear them talk about the models, does this maybe call for some a healthy degree of skepticism?
Well, I think so, Ray. And I would think most of us would agree that the models have always been wrong, and yet we continue to go to them for policy decisions because we have no place else to go, right? I mean, what else are we going to do? Notice another aspect of this, Ray, which is quite interesting. No one is suggesting the Darwinian morality of survival of the fittest is a good thing.
Right.
In other words, if atheists wanted to be consistent, they would just say, well, look, there's really no right or wrong here. And the world is governed by survival of the fittest. So let's just let, I'm not saying this, this is what, and no atheist is saying this. I'm just saying if you were to be a consistent atheist, mm-hmm. you would be perfectly fine to say, look, it's just survival of the fittest. If these people can't survive, okay, they're going to get out of the way, and that'll bring more resources for the healthy people. That's just the way nature is. Mm-hmm. That's the logical outcome of Darwinism. Now, again, I submit to you that there aren't any atheists out there that I know about that would agree with that, but it just goes to show what? That atheists realize that they can't live according to atheism, that they have to steal morality from a theistic worldview, even in this situation, to try and say, look, we ought not let a virus indiscriminately kill people. Why? Why not? If it's survival of the fittest, why shouldn't it kill the weakest out there? Again, I'm not saying this is my view. I'm not even saying it's the atheist view. I'm just saying it would not be a illogical outcome of Darwinism to say, let this go.
Mm-hmm. Frank, one of the things that I've been most frustrated about in recent days is we went from the convincing talking point, even from the White House, was that we needed to make sure that our hospitals and our healthcare mm-hmm. systems were not overwhelmed. So people mm-hmm. weren't dying in the hallway, dying in the waiting room, mm-hmm. and dying in the parking lot of the ER because you got too many patients. All right. That was a effective message. And I think to a certain extent, and it could have been a true message in certain right. areas like New right. York City. That being said, here we are 8 weeks into this, and there hasn't been one example of a patient going without care, even in New mm-hmm. York City. Mm-hmm. So my point is, how come we're still talking about keeping things shut down? It's like we keep moving the ball. So it's well, we need to not overwhelm our hospitals, but then it's, well, we need to do this and do that. What's the message?
Yeah, well, I think the message ought to be now that, and I had a doctor on my show, which I'll have on today again. His name is Dr. Dan Eichenberger from Indiana. He's treated coronavirus patients. He's been a CEO of a hospital. 5 weeks ago on my show, the show that airs here on the American Family Radio Network, he said more people will die from the economic impacts of coronavirus than the medical impacts. Mm-hmm. And I think his prediction is going to turn out to be correct. Now, the problem is it's even to a certain extent difficult to count how many coronavirus deaths we have. You notice how they moved the goalpost in this week. They added probable coronavirus deaths to the death count rather than actual. But also, it's hard, really hard, to count how many deaths are occurring from the economic shutdown. How many more domestic abuse cases do we have? How many more relapses into alcoholism and drug abuse do we have? How many people have committed suicide? How many people have lost their businesses and the stress related from that has caused heart attacks and other diseases? How many people aren't going to the doctors now because they're afraid of getting coronavirus? If they had gone to the doctors, they could have actually detected a disease that could be curable. Mm-hmm. Now, if they don't go till next month, they're not going to be able to be cured from it. How many people are not getting their dialysis now? How many are not getting their chemo treatments now? How many? It's hard to count.
Right.
But if you were to count all that up, you would probably have more deaths from the economic impact than the medical impact. And that's not to dismiss that we've had tremendous deaths from the medical impact. I'm just saying at some point, someone's going to have to say, look, we can't save all lives here. What we have to do is try and take an optimal approach where we're going to reopen the economy and continue social distancing and these kind of things. But if we don't reopen the economy, more people are going to die than if we do open the economy.
Well, and you've got to reopen the economy today.
Well, at least in the next May, it looks like it's going to happen. Yeah.
All right, Frank, your website, and we look forward to the show this weekend, which airs here on AFR at 9 o'clock Central Time here on American Family Radio, 9 a.m. Central Time Saturdays. And Sundays at what time?
I think it's 4.
I'm on hole 11. about that time, they'll get tuned in to that.
And of course, you do a lot of social distancing because you don't ever actually get near the green, do you?
That was a cheap shot, man.
No, I hear you do all the cheap shots,
yeah,
man.
Just tell us what your website is.
Crossexamine.org. Crossexamine with a D on the end of it. .org.
That was hurtful.
Hey. Yeah. I had to get my ball retriever regripped because that's the club I use the most. I was telling you.
All right, Frank. See ya.
Thanks, guys. Okay, God bless. See ya.
for those who don't know what a ball retriever is, you see some golfers, and they have these retractable sticks that go out about 12 feet, and they pull the ball out of the water or out of the grass or out of the weeds. That's why you don't play with $5 balls, $6 balls. I have a couple of friends that do that, but they're really good golfers. Mm-hmm. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Ray, what do you make of all this? Because I was in favor of the 15 to 30 day.
Right.
I favored, you know, listening to the president and helping reduce the curve. I think you were too, right?
Right. It was a reasonable request.
But after 30 days... I think Frank's argument now is very persuasive.
Well, the truth is 30 days is about as much as normal people can endure of living like this. You can't go 6 months in a row like this.
And business owners, imagine that.
Right. Yeah. Right. We're destroying the American economy. So what I think is going to happen in a practical sense is, I mean, we already see Mississippi, Kansas, Colorado, Montana, Texas, Florida, South Carolina, and some other states, Oregon also, beginning to taking the steps toward opening back up. So clearly, with or without what happens in Washington, America is slowly starting to open back up again. And I think by this time next month, I do not believe we'll be back to normal. We got a long way to go to get to normal, Tim, but I think the process is underway and will not be reversed. We are going to get the economy going again. We got to get people back to work.
Fred?
Yeah, I think the initial decisions were based on fear, what we were seeing in Europe, places like Italy. And so we wanted to avoid that kind of thing. But, you know, 30 days, 40 days into this now, we have a lot more knowledge about what's going on. And perhaps after the break, we'll come back, talk a little bit about what they're discovering in places like, I think it's a prison in Ohio. The infection rate is much higher than they thought, but a lot more people are asymptomatic. In other words, they've got it, they got rid of it without getting sick. And so that is important knowledge that you're going to see that we can build on for the future. But it also adds, I think, to what the president wants to do, and that's start reopening this country once again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And open up the churches. You know, churches... I mean, get back to having in-person meetings at their houses of worship and other things. Just returning to normal society as much as possible with the precautions that we all have talked about here that are common sense that we've been told about and that all of us can do without completely, you know, staying home, hiding under our beds. But there are some people who probably would like to see this misery continue because it benefits them politically when the president suffers politically because of it. All right, we shall return with Sandy Rios coming up in a few minutes here on Today's Issues. Stay tuned.
On the next Today's Issues.
We appreciate hearing from you. You can send us an email at comments@afr.net.
I pastor a small church, so I have to have a full-time job on the side. When I try to feed the flock, y'all feed me, and I thank God for y'all.
If you want to watch the show live, you can go to Facebook or YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues, and you can also access the stories that we talk about.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. There's a lot of fake news floating around the internet these days, especially when it comes to the China virus. The fact is, a good many reporters in the national media do not fact check. Case in point, the recent Liberate rally in Michigan, an image circulated around social media showing a guy holding a Nazi flag. So instead of freedom fighters, the media accused the protesters of being white nationalists. The president was even asked to weigh in on the story. But it turned out not to be true. The photograph was taken at a Bernie Sanders rally in March. CBS News posted a photo of a busy hospital in New York City. That turned out to be a hospital in Italy. They said it was an editing mistake. So here's the bottom line. Always double-check your source for news and information. Remember, they call it fake news for a reason. Be sure to get my new podcast. It's a free download available at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. If you would like to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. I'm Tim Wildman with Fred Jackson, Dr. Ray Pritchard, Walker Wildman. And we appreciate you listening. Again, if you want to, the live video stream is available of this show is available at Facebook and YouTube. And we also post the stories that we talk about at our Facebook page. And so just go to, just type in Today's Issues. Sandy Rios joins us most Tuesdays at this time. Sandy is Director of Governmental Affairs for our ministry here at American Family Association. So she represents us in our nation's capital. And Sandy also has the radio program, Sandy Rios in the Morning, heard weekdays here on AFR at 7 o'clock Central Time. Sandy, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Tim. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. We were talking to Dr. Frank Turk a few minutes ago, Sandy, about the models that were used, you know, to predict what would happen with this coronavirus. And the models have been way off in terms of, I guess, number of hospitalizations or number of deaths. Mm-hmm. Why do you think there were, I know you're not a scientist, Did you stay at a Holiday
One on the radio?
Did you stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night? That would be my next
yeah,
question.
Exactly. That's my qualification.
Yeah. Why do you think a lot of people were subscribing to those models, but the models, anyway, talk about that.
Well, I think, first of all, it has to be understood that the models are always guesses.
Right.
I first became aware of models with the whole climate change or global warming movement, because I'd never heard of that before, really. I guess that's come to be in computer age, and I was studying science before they were doing it on computers when I was in high school and college. But they model things like but that means they have to enter data. So they get, well, what if, you know, let's put that in. And let's say this many people, and let's say they try to stop it by doing this. So there's a million factors, and they put it in the computer, and they sit back and wait for the thing to spew out the paper. And the things that they entered come together in one formula, which says, in this case, it said, 250,000 to 1 million deaths in the U.S.? But the problem was, as you can imagine, it doesn't take a scientist to understand that the data that you would put in a computer would reflect your own inklings, interests, biases. And that's why, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez thinks that, you know, the planet's going to end in 12 years because some scientist, quote unquote, fancied when he put the stuff in the model, that's what he came out with. Well, all right. So these models have been used now to predict the effect of this coronavirus, COVID-19, on us. And they were wildly wrong, just wrong. And I think you could say that maybe the World Health Organization, which was doing the bidding of China, whose goal is to destroy our economy so that they can build theirs, because we were winning the trade war, and their economy has been contracting. That's just one thing that might have gone into skewing that model. How about we get America scared to death and have them shut down? Then you might have people on the left who know that President Trump is running for re-election in 2020, and the thing that he's running strongest on is what? The economy, which has been going gangbusters since he's taken office. So what if some people who were building those models might have had a bias against President Trump being reelected? Do you suppose that might have had an effect? Yeah. So.
Yeah, you got me thinking about that. Let me offer another, and this doesn't discount everything Sandy said or the possibility of those things. But I think it was a perfect storm of fear based on two things, and it was you know, kind of like the perception is the reality, even though it may not be, but the perception was based on a couple things. If we remember back in early March, when we all saw what was happening to Italy, and there was all over our TVs, and lockdowns and shutdowns, and they don't have enough places to bury people. Newt Gingrich was on TV from Rome saying, "You better take this seriously, America. So that was happening on our TVs day in, day out, and it was real. People were dying, and now people weren't looking, investigating. Maybe, well, why are they older? Are they Did the Chinese, that there wasn't much talk about why? Well, the Chinese and the people in northern Italy, they go back and forth all the time because they have a lot of workers and tourists and stuff over there. So that was happening at the times that the president was having to make some big decisions. So the president, in his mind, I'm thinking he and the vice president and his team there are probably thinking, if this does come over here, And it does start happening, what we're seeing happening in Italy and what happened in China, then I'm going to be responsible. This is the way I'm thinking he's thinking. I'm going to be responsible for mass death, and I can't take a chance on this, and I'm hearing what these scientists and doctors are saying. So that's one thing. The other thing is, and it's related, is the unknown. why is it called novel? Is because it's new.
Yeah.
It wasn't the flu. Exactly. It had flu similarities, but what we were hearing about how this COVID-19 ravaged the lungs of people, unlike the flu, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And we have a vaccine for the flu for those who, you know, that doesn't prevent 100%, but it anyway. So those things, I think, Sandy, went into the decision-making at the time. First we did the 15, then we did the 30. So I guess that's a little less conspiratorial than what you suggested. But I don't, well, I don't disagree that a lot of these the smart people in college. The smart people in colleges. Okay, I'll just put it that way. They are very liberal, okay? And also, now, another thing here is a lot of these predictions and models, when the scientists came on to describe them, they always put a caveat on the front of this, a disclaimer. If you listen to them, they'll say, now, this is the best information we have at the time based on so-and-so. But we don't hear that anymore. All you hear is the number that's projected.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's not fair because you don't hear their. You don't hear there. Anyway, go ahead, Sandy. You want to comment on?
Yeah, just keep put everything you said is, you know, that's how I heard it too, Tim. Right. And obviously, you're not going to make anything up. The Fox was doing there. They were a lot of our people listen to Fox. It's our preferred network for very good reasons. But Fox is pivoting, and they also echoed some of the worst things. And remember that the president somehow, someone put in front of him a scientist who, well, there are lots of doctors and there are lots of scientists, but we ended up with Dr. Fauci, who was very close to Hillary Clinton. The doctor, he's written her, told her he loved her. He was so sorry she didn't win. Remember that the left's mantra, Rahm Emanuel tells us this frequently, that they should never waste a good crisis. So while what was happening in Italy was a legitimate, and China too for that matter, horrendous deaths, remember that there are people on the left who see that as an opportunity. So that's what I think happened.
Yeah, I don't doubt that, but I don't think they planned it.
No, but
I'm not. Because Cuomo, why would he want to, hey, let's bring suffering to my state, and, even though I'm a liberal state and go ahead.
Well, okay, but part of it, Tim, is I think they're a lot more devious than we could imagine. So I'm not saying Cuomo created the virus or anybody created it. Certainly, I think China may have. We'll see if it was man-made or if it, you know, I don't know. That doesn't mean, look, you say that Cuomo doesn't want to kill his own people. Look what Nancy Pelosi's doing. She's in her kitchen with her big freezers, $24,000 freezers, talking about all the ice cream she loves, showing an anchor.
Oh, no doubt. She's detached.
So people, so meanwhile, people are suffering. They're losing their jobs. There was a businessman in Oklahoma committed suicide last week, small business owner. So what's the difference? If they are willing to make political hay out of the suffering of the American people and their constituents, then I think they would. That's not a stretch to me, and that's what I think they have.
Oh, I agree with you on that. I agree with you. Go ahead, Walker.
Yeah, I mean, I think early on, everyone was doing the same thing. All the elected officials, Democrat, Republican, were all doing the same thing. It's called mitigation, and historically, mitigation works. I mean, there's not one study that shows that keeping your distance from people doesn't help prevent viruses. So mitigation works. I think what Sandy's getting towards and what we can prove now is now that we've done the mitigation and we've kept our hospitals from getting overwhelmed, there's no reason not to reopen our country and heal our land.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who wants to keep things locked down is what Sandy's talking
about. They have
a
political motive.
They have a political motive.
Yes.
And who knows what it is, what the end game is for them.
I'll tell you what it is. It's to beat Trump.
That's right.
Yeah, it's to inflict more harm
right,
on the country
right.
so that they can beat Trump.
Right. Yeah. Now I think we're into pure politics
yeah.
on the reopening of this country. The Democrats don't want it,
right.
and it needs to be done. And there's some governors stepping forward and saying, we're moving on.
You know what's going to be funny to watch or interesting to watch is these red states are about to open.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Right.
These red states are about to open. The reason, I think, is because it's more common sense. Conservatism is more common sense. And secondly, it's more respecting of liberty,
yeah,
and freedom,
yes,
and personal responsibility. These blue states or nanny states, a lot of them, will take care of you. And what's going to happen is, I think, based on my model.
Oh, that reminds me of something funny. If I have a chance, I'll tell you.
Then we'll write that down, something funny.
Okay.
Tim's model that I came up with on the way to work this morning, I was listening to Sandy Rios, I had to turn her down so I could gather my thoughts, is that these blue state citizens are going to see what's happening in the red states, and they're going to go, why are we doing that? Why am I still stuck at home?
Right.
You know, why is my business still closed? We want to do what the red states are doing. I think I think you're about to see a lot of it. Go ahead. What was something funny, Sandy? Then we'll
I don't know if you guys caught the president. You know, he has such a great sense of humor, but he doesn't dare show it in these briefings. But one day he was talking and they were discussing the models. And he said, I don't know anything about these models. Well, I don't know about models. That's what he said about models. Well, not these models.
Oh, my word.
And then he didn't dare laugh.
Right.
But it was so funny.
Goodness gracious. You want to talk about Christy Brinkley? We can talk about Christy. That's probably what he was thinking. All right, Sandy, thanks for joining us, and we appreciate it very much. What do you got coming up in the morning?
Oh, you know what? To be honest, I probably will talk about models. I'm trying to get a guy who's an expert, a scientist, and if I can get him, that's who will be on. And this Friday, by the way, I've got a very special show. It's an entire hour with Sidney Powell, who's the defender of Michael Flynn. Sidney has a new book called Conviction Machine, and it's fascinating. So that'll be Friday's show.
Okay. Thanks, Sandy. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Okay, that's Sandy Rios joining us. Yes, Walker.
Yeah, we were our country, and this needs to be clear, our country as a whole was getting very bad information or no information, especially from China. Italy was, it looks like they were just testing people who were in the hospital, meaning it skews your numbers when you only test people who were in the hospital.
Also, Italy was unprepared. Totally unprepared.
Yes.
They were just hit, and I didn't know that there was all this travel back and forth between particularly northern Italy
and Wuhan.
And Wuhan.
Sure. Yeah. So our leaders, including the president, were getting horrible information to base decisions on, life or death decisions on. So I think we need to give the benefit of the doubt to our leaders during those early days. Nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows what's going to happen. And they were just basing their decisions.
Better safe than sorry is the approach.
But now that we're here,
right,
we have our own information that's much more trusted by our own doctors.
Also with our own eyeballs.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're seeing what's going on here. So I think now that we're here, we know all the information we need to know. There's no excuses not to open up.
You know, parts of the country. To your point, Walker, and this is really key because you're going to be seeing a lot of this. We're now finding out through testing that the infection rates are much higher than what we thought. Now, that sounds really bad. Dr. Mark Siegel addressed that last night. He was on with Tucker Carlson. And we want to be very clear, in a strange way, this is a good news story. This is cut number one.
But a study out of the University of Southern California that's ongoing shows 4% of those tested in the county were positive for COVID-19. This projects out to over 300,000 people, not 8,000. Now, in Heinsberg, Germany, they've tested the town, and they found that 14% of those tested, that's right, 14% already have antibodies to COVID-19. And in Ohio, at the correctional facility that you were talking about, 1,800 out of 2,500 inmates tested positive, but only 105 had symptoms. We're talking about a virus that for most cases is dramatically mild. We're talking about a lower fatality rate than we thought. And we're talking about the tremendous need, Tucker, for antibodies to figure out who has it, who might be immune, who can reenter society. In other words, the death rate is much, much lower than we've been talking about.
That is such important information now. lots of people, it may turn out that a couple of million Americans have had this, but their own immune system got them through it. They didn't even show symptoms. And so that's extremely important in the equations, the models that ought to be coming out of this. The immune system is able, for a lot of people like that prison in Ohio, your own immune system was able to deal with it. Antibodies are being developed in individuals. That's exactly what we need to fight this thing.
Yeah. Well, and one thing, though, that holds me up on that is, people are saying, well, if more people have this, then the death rate is lower, et cetera, which is good news. But, you know, those saying we need mass testing, we just need to test everybody, whether they have symptoms or not. Mm-hmm. My only concern with that is that's not apples to apples when it comes to other illnesses.
Right.
We don't do mass testing for flu, even if you don't have symptoms. Mm-hmm. So the problem with applying that standard and counting asymptomatic cases is that's not what we do with other illnesses. Now, if we want to start doing that with all illnesses, we could, but that is going to mess up your metrics.
Right.
And isn't part of the problem, Walker, that we don't have 200 million coronavirus testing kits sitting around waiting to be used? I mean, we're testing, what, 250,000 people a day, which is fantastic compared to, say, a month ago. But even if we wanted to test everybody, that capability is not there right now anyway. So as you said, this is really not apples to apples at all. The truth is, I was thinking these asymptomatic carriers, I mean, I could have been exposed. I'm not aware of it, but I'm out and about riding my bike and, you know, go out and do speaking and stuff like that. So, I mean, any of us, us guys right here, the four of us,
sure.
Any of us could be asymptomatic carriers of it, or as Fred said, we could have been exposed to it and body having already thrown it off, and we had no awareness of it. Would it even be of what value would it be to test us, except to find it if we actually had it right now? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that is a good point. And I think, to Fred's point about this, about what we're finding out about this virus is, it's not as something to be as afraid about as we originally thought, which means that these whole nanny state tactics that Fauci and others are talking about doing mass antibody tests and having a registry of who all has been tested and carrying certificates around. I mean, this stuff is bizarre, ridiculous, and these numbers that we're seeing about how more people have had this thing than originally thought prove that we don't need to start giving up all these privacy rights for the sake of safety.
Yeah. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. You're listening to AFR, American Family Radio. If you would like to send us an email, go to comments@AFR.net, comments@AFR.net. If you want to watch on the internet, go to Facebook or YouTube and type in Today's Issues, and you can follow us there. Fred, next story.
Yeah, well, talking about reopening the nation, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, all announcing plans starting even this Friday.
You know why that is, don't you?
Why?
Football will be here pretty soon.
Huh? Okay.
And the SEC people are not going to tolerate no football, so you can see them why they're already opening.
They're starting that.
Okay.
Also, Florida, the governor there, Ron DeSantis, saying he's been successful in fighting the virus there. And we saw pictures last weekend, I think it was, Jacksonville, the beaches there, allowing people back to the beaches. Here's Ron DeSantis. He was interviewed this morning on Fox, cut number two.
You can continue to fight COVID-19, but also get people back to work and have society function again. And Brian, I never did draconian orders here like you see in some of these other states where a dad would get arrested for or get cited for taking his daughter to the park. That doesn't work. We've never done that. We've been very, I think, reasonable with the people of Florida, and they've responded.
I tell you, the beaches thing, I don't really understand why you forbid people to go to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the governor there of Florida, he has allowed, as I understand it, he's allowed the cities and municipalities to decide for themselves. That's why Jacksonville's open and Destin isn't, for example, right now. But when you go to the beach, you're social distancing. Everybody is.
Right.
Unless you're the spring crowd spring break. Right.
Not everybody.
Well, okay, your spring break college kids.
Right, they're not.
They're not. But families who go to beaches and people go, they're not on top of each other.
That's exactly.
They're getting in the water, the salt water. Anyway, Walker, right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure how we, you know, well, the rules are always created for the people who don't follow them.
Sure.
So to Ray's point, I mean, you got the college kids at spring break on top of each other, you know, sharing drinks and touching and
right.
Not practicing any kind of hygiene. But then you have the family who will follow the rules.
Right.
So, but, you know, I'm not sure how long we can start policing this stuff. You know, you're always going to have your people who don't wash their hands, who touch too much stuff and pick their nose and don't practice hygiene. I mean, but it's America.
The rest of
but
us,
they're going to get sick, and it's a free country. So, to a certain extent, we can't continue these, even
but
the 6 foot
may
rule.
Die.
Well,
and you're responsible.
Wash your hands and stay away from people.
Okay.
And if you don't, that's called individual responsibility. And if you get you get sick.
You watch these blue state people. You just watch them.
Yeah.
When the red states start opening up and their hospitals aren't overrun. Now, I could be wrong. There's some risk involved here.
Sure.
In doing what they're doing. But I do think it's right. Risk considered that the ending of the economy and joblessness and all those things Sandy's talked about, Fred's talked about, the pain and misery that's going to come with that is going to far outweigh the... So there is a balance there. There's a trade-off in to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Fred.
All right. Well, let's end up this hour on something non-coronavirus. All right?
All right.
Now, I have to admit this last story is probably going to be for the 50-plusers. In our audience.
All right.
Now, the name Tom Lester, maybe you're not familiar with.
I am.
But I'm going to play you a little bit of music, and you're going to hear from the farmhand named Eb on that show called Green Acres, cut number 6.
What's this got to do with flying saucers? Oh, did you see one, too?
No, I did.
That figures.
It was about 11 o'clock at night, and I was getting ready for bed when this saucer buzzed the barn.
Really? And what did you do?
I pulled down my shade. I'm shy.
And there it was. That was the character, Eb Dawson, Tom Lester, a devoted Christian, a wonderful guy from Mississippi. And he passed away yesterday from Parkinson's disease. At the edge of 81, but he's got a terrific, terrific story, a terrific testimony. I think, Walker, were you mentioning this morning, somebody was mentioning, it was Brent. Brent was mentioning that he actually gave his testimony at a Billy Graham crusade.
Yeah. He was from Laurel, Mississippi.
That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Tom Lester, the actor on Green Acres, and he was a listener to AFR because I remember he came up here about 20 years ago. To visit with us and did an interview with us. And so that was about 20 years ago or so.
Yeah.
Who were the other actors, Fred? A little trivia there. Who were the other actors on that show?
Oh, you had, was it
Adrian? Ray may know too.
Was it Adrian Gabor? There were two Gabor sisters. One of
Ava,
them was.
Ava Gabor?
Ava Gabor. Yeah, and what was her husband?
Good night. What was the main guy's name on Green Acres? The man on the farm, huh? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. We'll find out.
I tell you what, JJ can do a mean Mr. Haney.
That's right.
We're having him do that tomorrow.
All right.
What was the guy's name?
Eddie Albert.
Eddie Albert.
Yes.
Eddie Brent Albert. All right. Thanks, Fred.
You're welcome.
Steve Jordahl will be with us in 5 minutes. And Ray Walker and yours truly, Tim, will return also. See you back in 5.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.